Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways. My name is Reggie. Welcome to episode 142. And I'm going to be talking about how we won't be getting a sequel to Mike's Christmas performance that we had a couple years back.
And I'm Pastor Mike. I'm going to be talking about how to doubt your doubts.
All that and more on this episode of Tangible Takeaways. Hello, HDC family. Welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 142. My name is Reggie. I am joined by Pastor Mike Roberts. Mike, how you doing, sir?
Doing great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. I know me and you, we don't get to hang out too much in this forum.
We don't. I'm confident, Reggie, that because it's a holiday week and they weren't anticipating that many people were going to watch this.
Yeah.
Let's just bring in
Reggie. Let's get those guys up there. Yeah, we'll get Reggie up there. We'll get Mike. It'll be fine. Everyone's on vacation enjoying getting prepared for the holidays.
All right. Welcome to the B team.
That's all right. That's why we're here. You can't have an A team without the B team.
That's true.
So I'm just
that
saying, man.
True.
Great message this weekend, man. Every
Thanks,
time
bro.
We get to see you up on stage, man, honestly, man, I really enjoy it. I tell people how Mike Roberts is so soothing, and it's like listening to Mr. Rogers. it's fantastic. A lot of you guys, if you don't know that, but yeah. You shared some really cool information this weekend about a great new season of life that happened for you, sir.
Yeah.
You are now a grandpa.
Yeah, I am.
Man, tell us just a little bit about that, Mike. Tell us.
Man, it's just a strange thing because, number one, I don't feel old enough to be a grandpa.
Okay.
So that's weird. It's like, how did I get here? But the other thing is just, it's just so cool.
Wait a minute. How old are you, though, Mike? If that was, Well, I'm just saying, if you're not old enough to be a grandpa, what is the age that you...
I am 57. I am plenty old
but
enough.
But you don't feel old enough.
I just don't feel that old. So,
that's
I don't
great.
Know.
That's great.
Grandpas are people older than me.
You think, right.
Yeah.
Of course. That's good to know. So, yeah. But tell us that.
Yeah. So, I mean, just watching your kids become parents. And honestly, they're killing it. They're doing such a great job.
That's awesome.
My son and daughter-in-law are just awesome parents, and it's just fun watching them just grow into this new season of life. But then, you know, to have this grandbaby that's just, I don't know, it's been a while since I've, you know, been around little.
Something that small.
Yeah. But it's just, it kind of takes you back, but it's also like, man, they grow and they change so fast, and it's just... it's a fun journey.
Yeah.
You know?
I can only imagine just how awesome that is. Like, I mean, obviously being a dad as well and how much you love your own kids, but then seeing them like this is a product, this is their child.
Yeah.
And just being able to like embrace that, man.
Yeah.
So,
and then you just want to spend money all the time.
I mean, I keep hearing how it's so great to be able to like, you know, you get to have them, you love them, you take care of them, but then you're like, you're going home and like, I'm going to spoil you and all this stuff. And now, go back with mom and dad.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Yeah. All the perks of being a grandparent, man.
It's great.
So congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
Just want to let you know, man. And I know so many of us here at HDC wishing you guys the best. Congratulations to you and Joel and Mo, man. So happy for them, brother.
Yeah.
You had the great privilege of kind of closing out our Minor Prophets series.
Yeah.
And you even talked about how even in the sermon, this is like a capstone of not just the Minor Prophets, but even the Old Testament, concluding that, because after that, we have Matthew to the New Testament.
Yeah.
Now. But tell us even like the preparation in that, even recognizing the importance of that, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was thinking back in my very first church that I was ever a pastor of, the very first sermon series that I ever preached was through the book of Malachi, which
really?
Is weird. Yeah. I was like, I think that was the first book I ever preached to. So I grabbed my old notes that were printed. So now I am old. Now I am old enough to be a grandpa. I grabbed my notes.
Because you had them printed.
They were printed on like a dot matrix printer. I mean, you know, it had the little perforated
no
edges.
No way.
So you had
tear
away,
man. Okay,
you know?
Okay.
Anyway, sorry. For those of you who don't know what that is.
But he's not old enough to be a grandpa. He's not old enough to be a grandpa, guys.
See that. But anyway, it was kind of fun because I kind of opened those up and kind of looked at what, you know, I preached when I was 28 years old and a new pastor. And I don't know, that was kind of wild. But then, you know, there was just so much. I kind of remember kind of going back through each of the different books that we've preached through, these 12 books.
Right, right.
And kind of just processing all that and wanting to figure out how do I preach this book, but also kind of tie up everything that we've been looking at in this series, and also kind of this idea that we're moving from an old covenant with God to a new covenant in Christ. That's like the next thing on God's timetable. So I don't know. It was I spent a lot of time. The biggest challenge I think in delivering a message like this is figuring out what not to say, because there was so much right?
So, oh my goodness, I can only imagine. Yeah.
So just weeding it out and just like, okay, this is what we need to focus on.
Right,
so,
right.
Anyway.
I know they say like even in studying and preparing to teach, like you have all of this information, you have all of this that you've gone over, and you really only use like this small percentage of it. And you have a whole book that you were trying to culminate, and in the sense like that whole capstone of, okay, we're ending it here.
Yeah.
And even on that too, man, that was such a great kind of connection of like that whole capstones of your life or certain these milestones. And like, man, the last capstone that you're going to have on your life is going to be that tombstone, man.
Yeah.
That was such a great like hammer home to like get in. I think you said it in one of your, and obviously when you were teaching, it was like, let me get up in your business a little bit.
Yes.
And it was very much that. It was really good because you laid that all out in the beginning, like, setting the course for us, like, hey, we're going to look at this through admit, believe, and choose. Like the ABCs, you walk through that whole thing, which is honestly what we do at HDC. We're trying
all the time
preach that in the sense that that's not an HDC gimmick, man. That is a biblical sound thing that we actually want to ingrain in you guys of what that looks like. Even like understanding how to teach that with the ABCs, admit, believe, and choose, man. Tell us a little bit of that, how making sure that you were making that known, I guess.
Yeah, one of the things that I didn't say in the message was I feel like sometimes because of the way we do the ABCs at the end of our messages, right? It can appear like admit, believe, choose is kind of the way in. It's the door. It's the it's what you walk through to get into the Christian life.
Right, right.
But the ABCs are not just an entry point to the Christian life. They're the way of the Christian life.
Of course, yes.
Like every single day of our lives, we need to figure out, it's like, how do I get real with like the areas of my life that I'd kind of just like to gloss over, you know, kind of put them off, blame them on somebody else, or just, you know, pretend maybe they're not that bad or whatever. And I really need to admit, I need to humble myself.
Right.
I need to be like, okay,
continuously.
God. Yeah. All the time, every day.
Yeah.
And then believe, like, do I believe this? I say, you know, it's here, or I say it, but do I really believe this? And so just that whole thing of like, what do I really believe? And I should live like I believe.
Exactly.
Right. Belief is not something you just think about. It's something you actually live by.
Because if you actually believed it, it would change the way that you live. If you actually believe that, it will actually help your course of action, the choices that you make in your everyday life. Like, I love that. That's a great connection to make sure it's not just the entry point, man. This is a daily thing that we continuously do over and over again to kind of just reevaluate ourselves, man. That was so great. I loved how you kind of you were talking about a little bit, and you really hammered home how we look at God and we understand in his sovereignty and his goodness. It was such a great point, man, how you're able to bring together, like, a lot of us would think, man, if God is so good, how could he allow this, or how could he allow that? Like, and I think that's like the age old question that people would actually come at us with, right? Is like, if God is really all this, like, why would God allow evil?
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like that was such a great way that you kind of even broke it down a little bit more for us in that.
Yeah.
Even in your opinion, like, even being able to expound on that a little bit. I know, like you said, you only get a little bit to say on stage.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was a really good way for everyone to recognize, like, his sovereignty and his attributes in that context.
Yeah, and I think for me, the goal that I had just in preaching that message was to take something that is pretty complicated, pretty complex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are large books written on that one,
so that one
subject,
topic, for sure. Yeah.
And but what are the handles that I take with me, you know, in my life, to say, man, when there's stuff happening to me or around me that's just like, this is not right.
Right.
This is not good. It's like, how can God be good and let this stuff happen? Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, there are reasons. Like, you can get into all kinds of philosophy and talk about different reasons for that. But for me, it really comes back to, can I trust God?
Right. Without all the information.
Without all the answers. Like, can I handle it if he never gives me an answer? But I can believe that he's good enough. He's got to have a good answer.
Right.
And then when I went back to Genesis 6 and just thought about how God felt that he was deeply troubled in his own spirit.
Yeah.
I just thought, he's been feeling that way ever since we sinned, which was shortly after he made us, Adam and Eve, they sinned, and it's been troubling him. And then to see that sin work its way out, I mean, the very next human beings we read about in the story are two brothers, and one kills the other.
Right.
And it's just like, man, how troubling is that to his parents? How troubling is that to, you know, the society at that time? But, man, God more than anything is troubled. And it just continues throughout his human history. And if it's troubled God that much to allow it to go on, he's got to have a good reason. And I can kind of sit in that and go, okay,
right.
God's big enough. He's powerful enough. If he wanted to put an end to this, he would. He's got to have a good reason.
Yeah, yeah. So. It was so great because I remember you were explaining how, like, when God actually created us in his own image, like, he knit himself with us. So everything, like you were just explaining, like, that we have gone through, everything, all the hurt, the sin, like, hurts him as well in that sense that his heart is joined with us, and even recognizing that's such a great visual, I think, to even think about that, because I know for students, I try to get them to understand. I was even teaching this recently, how, like, yeah, like, I love my son so much, but the truth is, like, I wouldn't let my son die for you guys. Like, in my sense, like, I might, okay, if it came down to it, man, it's my life or these kids. Like, okay, like, I'll lay down my life, but to sacrifice my son, but that's what he did for us in that sense, but in the sense of God and Christ are, of course, one and the same through the Trinity, and this is him. He's like, this is a part of himself that he's like, I will ultimately sacrifice myself because of you guys being knit together in that sense, that is something, we're connected to God, made man in his own image. And I think it was the quote that you said too, it was in the notes as well, right? That, like, God's tears are part of human history or something like that, right? That was a quote that you had in there, right?
Yeah, kind of a heavy book written by a philosophy professor.
Gotcha.
But man, that book, Nicholas Wolterstorff is the name.
Gotcha, okay.
But Lament of Forest Son, you know, just, and it's been a while since I've read through it, but man, that one quote has stuck with me. The tears of God are the meaning of history.
And yeah, there you go.
It's like the fact that God's heart is broken, but he continues to allow us to go on. It's just like, oh, okay. That's why we're still here,
because
he's willing to suffer right alongside us.
And I think it was so great too, even like when you were explaining how, like, he must have a good reason. Whether we know it or not, there must be a good reason. It was really funny. I had the privilege of hanging out with my mom and my dad yesterday and my sister and stuff. Yeah. So I went to go see them, and we were talking about some things of us growing up, right? So me and my sister, just a fun story. And it specifically made me think of that, because I was talking to my sister and a couple weeks ago, we were hanging out, and it was like, hey, if we're with mom and dad again, we need to ask them this question that we used to actually have, like, in Ontario when we were little. I was like 5, she was like 8. We used to have this acre of birds, this whole aviary of like 200 birds, parakeets, right? And we used to go and get the little baby birds in their nests, and we'd play with them until they died. We did it every day, man. And it was like, and we were like, you know, as parents now, we would play with them, we'd hang out, and then we'd bury them, and we'd have little funerals for them. And me and my sister, who have kids now, we're like, that seems like a horrible thing that you would just allow your kids to do. Why would you let your kids, like, we were talking to each other, like, we would never let our kids just go out there and play with the birds and kill them. if we have the opportunity, we're going to ask mom and dad specifically, why did you let us? Why? So we did that. I was like, hey, sis, remember we had a question to ask mom and dad? And I said, why did you let us play with those birds until they died? And they're like, because we had so many of them, it didn't matter. And I was like, oh, okay. I would have never got the answer to that question, that it was like, we didn't see it as a bad thing. You might have, but it really wasn't. It was population control.
Yeah.
In a very small note, it made me think of God has a lot of reasons why he allows things to happen while we were never maybe have the full explanation of it. And he's like, no, man, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly what that is. But anyways, it was something I specifically thought of last night from this weekend. And I had the ability to tell Pastor Mike about it. Yeah, so there you go, man.
And just so we're clear, there were no pets harmed in the making of this sermon.
Not this one. Yeah. So. That was this one is completely fine. Years ago. Anyways, but yeah. Mike, you did a great metaphor too, man. I feel like there are so many different things kind of picked out of this one. What's the whole plane and the parachute illustration, man? Like, we don't put a parachute on to make us comfortable for this flight. Like, it is for the purposeful means of salvation. Like, this isn't something that's supposed to be for that ride, but this is ultimately for your benefit, right? It was such a great thing. Yeah, if you want to expound on that even a little bit for us, man.
Yeah. Again, just trying to give people some handles for something really significant. The reality is, you know, true confessions here. You know, every once in a while, Pastor Mike has dark days. I'm not that different than other people, and I can get mad at God. I'm like, God, I don't understand it. I don't understand why, you know, I'm having to go through this. I mean, I'm one of the good guys. I'm you know, I'm trying here. Give me a break. And I can get kind of down and dark, and it's important, that metaphor. And the first time I heard it was from a guy named Ray Comfort. He's the first guy I ever heard use that metaphor, and it just really stuck. But so thanks, Ray, if you're watching this. man, it helps me on my dark days.
Yeah.
To remember, I deserve nothing from God except for really his just punishment of my sin and me as a sinner. And so I didn't come to Jesus for all the good stuff. I came to him because he will save my soul.
Right. Yeah.
And I hang on to that, when it's hard, when life is just hard, and life is hard. And, my hope was that somebody in the audience needed to be reminded of that.
I thought it was great because it kind of even put in the perspective of me thinking through that illustration. Like I said, it resonated with me. Like, yeah, like we don't worry so much about the journey, man. We're worried about at the end of this journey. Like, yes, we are in this life for a season, man, but we're looking towards the next life, towards what happens in eternity, right? So it's like, this plane ride could be somewhat bumpier and uncomfortable, but man, I'm making sure that we land in the right area, man. I'm making that we land safely to where when I get off this plane, I'm in the right place, man. I'm preparing for that part of the journey. Yep. This part of the journey is uncomfortable, man. Rightfully so, right? Understanding like what that looks like. And like, and the only way that I'm going to, if there's a whole case, like, we live in a broken and dying world. Like, just, you know, this plane is eventually going down.
Yeah.
And this is the only thing that's actually going to save you. So you better put it on. Like, that's something that's definitely going to help you, you know?
And I think about that, you know, we're surrounded by people who haven't put on Jesus.
Right.
And they can look at us, you know, like, why are you wearing that parachute? Are you so connected to that? You know, why is that so important to you? And the way we do.
It's the only thing that's going to save me.
Yeah. The way we do life is weird to some people. And like, why are you doing that? You know, and yet we have a good reason. And I think it's a great opportunity to even to explain to other people. Yeah. I think it's a great opportunity or a great illustration we can use. You know, maybe there's people in our own oikos, you know, that kind of need that illustration. It might help them understand.
Yeah, how comfy are you trying to just make this life, this world? If that's all that you're living for, Just it's, so you know it's going to end.
Coming down. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. 10 out of 10
die.
People are going to die.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, so. That's such a great, man, just even a great connection point to even talk through different ways to even make that relatable and stuff like that. Looking at some of the things that you were talking over in regards to some, like, individuals and communities to kind of ensure how would you kind of encourage them in their relationships to kind of give a love and respect to others as us being image bearers? Like, what would you tell them? Like, hey, man, this is how you were made. This is what we're called to do. How would you maybe encourage them to continue to do that?
There's another analogy that I use a lot when it comes to love. We know that God calls us to love, but the reality is when we are always giving love, but we're in a position maybe where we're not receiving it, is when it gets dicey, right? That's when it gets really hard. If you're in a marriage where you're the one loving,
right,
but you're married to a very unloving person, you kind of get a little dry. Or if you're a parent and you're loving those kids and those kids are just sucking it all out of you, you kind of get to the end of yourself. And here's just a picture maybe would be helpful. It's helpful for me. So Jesus in John 13 talks about he's the vine and the branches. He uses this illustration. He says, you need to abide in me like a branch abides in a vine. So right. You got this vine and you got all these branches, and a branch doesn't bear fruit unless it stays connected to the vine. And
Jesus
uses that analogy. And one of the things he talks about in that analogy is love.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing is, if I think that love is up to me and I think that I'm never getting enough love, at some point I'm going to stop. Loving you. I'm going to stop respecting you. I'm going to stop giving you dignity because I'm not getting it back.
Right, right, yeah.
It's kind of a two-way street type of thing is how we tend to look at it because we run out of gas.
Right.
But as followers of Jesus,
yes.
Man, if we stay connected and we realize how much love, how much dignity,
mm-hmm.
how much comfort, how much joy, how much peace, how much all this stuff that he pours into our life,
right?
His is inexhaustible. So if I stay connected to his supply of love, respect, joy, peace, comfort, patience, kindness,
all that stuff,
I have enough. Because I'm connected to him. It's when I lose connection with him that my resource of love or whatever else runs out.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important, just to keep that in mind and to just, think through practically what is it about my relationship with Jesus that makes me feel the most connected. And maybe that's just, it's times of personal worship through song or through prayer or through Bible study, or maybe it's, what you experience in community with others, but you have to stay connected to the vine.
100%.
Or you can't bear the fruit.
Yeah. You have to stay connected to God. In connection to him, you'll be able to pour that out onto others. And if you're not, there's no sense. I think I use the illustration, which makes perfect sense of the abiding in God, with the vine and the branches and all of that. I know I normally use a lot of fitness illustrations, but in the sense of like, if you're not getting the right nutrition, like you're going to burn out.
Yep.
Right. In the sense, like if you don't eat, of course, like, oh man, I don't feel good. Like this and that. I feel tired. I got a headache. Well, did you eat anything today? Like, no, like maybe you should, like that might help out. Right.
Yeah.
But in the sense, like, that's why it's like, I don't do my devotions. I don't go to church. I don't find these times to make sure that I'm worshiping and connecting because I need to, or I should say because I just want to. It's because I need to.
Yeah.
It's like having that presence with God, having that connection with him on a daily basis. If I don't do that, I'm not going to have the ability to lead my wife well. I'm not going to have the ability to pour into my kids well, to lead my ministry well, right? Yeah. Like if I try to do that on my own strength and my own merit, 100%, you're going to burn out. Like you're not going to have
just
that.
Not
so
enough.
So that's just a great thing. Even like, trying to encourage other people and the communities and what that looks like to continue to show love and respect to people, man, stay connected to God. Don't let that be something that, in a sense, is like, oh, maybe I'll do that as a leftover thing. Ah, if I got time in the day, I'll do that. Which I think that's what a lot of people do. Like, oh, I think that's what I hear most often is like, I don't have a lot of time to do that. Like, believe me, you want at least some amount of time. Otherwise, it's not going to be beneficial to you later on. So,
for sure.
Yeah, great, man. You talked some good stuff on generosity and stewardship, man. It was it was fantastic, I think, to even get into the practicality of recognizing how much do we trust God, especially when it comes to our finances. I think it was even a gut check for me. I think you did illustration, or you talked about when you were a kid, and you're like, yeah, when I had little, it was actually harder for me to trust God because to give to God because I only had so little of something, right? And it was like, oh, man. I kind of had the reverse of that. I remember when I was young, and I remember this verse, and it was like, well, I'm going to keep giving to God what I can because I'm supposed to get more back.
Right.
And it was like such the wrong reason, but I didn't have that much, but I was like, I want more.
Yeah.
And it was like such the twisted backwards way of thinking of it. And it's crazy because like I have, of course, more now.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, man, I still need to trust God in the same context, not what I can do with this, but I know for a fact that I could trust God what he can do on that. But yeah, even teaching the church that, man, what tell us, just need to expand a little bit more on good stewardship for us.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole passage in chapter 3 of Malachi, so helpful. The idea that there is a storehouse is weird for us. Old Testament believers would bring their tithe and their offering, and they would bring it, and they would go into the storehouse, and it was out of that storehouse that, you know, the priesthood was maintained. It was out of that storehouse that, like, taking care of even foreigners, like people that would come in, and they were traveling through their land, and maybe they needed something, and so they would give out of that storehouse. I think about that. You know, people may not know it. At our church, we have a storehouse, and you know, we pay for our bills, and we pay for staffing and all this kind of stuff. But you know, one of the things that happens when people give to High Desert Churches, we give money away to people who are in need, and it's just not like we're just throwing around like, you know, we're Santa or something, but it's you know, we're careful about that. And but what I realize is that when that sowing generously, reaping generously thing, if someday someone you love is going to need
100%.
And man, if we're so busy holding on to what we have, you know, we may not be in a place to meet that need, but man, the church is going to outlive me. I mean, it's going to go on long after I'm dead. And I want it to flourish
after
I'm gone. Anyway, stewardship, simple thing that I've been applying in my life for a long time is God always gets his cut first.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I get, what I get income wise, God's comes in off the top. Because if I wait and pay all the other bills and see what's left, And so that's been huge for me to get to that place where, okay, I'm not going to think about all the other bills. I'm not going to worry about how much is left.
Give God first. Yeah.
God gets his first. And it's something that I've already chosen. I've already determined in my own heart.
Exactly. Yeah. Same thing. I feel like the best way even for that is like it comes out of the account automatically. It comes out of this. We already know that. That's
kind of nice with the electronic
way
we do things now.
Yeah, direct deposit, things like that. It's like this is specifically to God. Like I remember hearing this a long time ago. Like it's almost recognizing what that means and recognizing what our stewardship calls us to do. It's like I can't afford not to give to God what is God's.
Yeah.
Right. Like I can't afford not to do that in the sense of even like you said, if like, okay, well maybe I'll give to God later on. That's like, no, we don't give God a tip like, oh, thanks God. Here you go.
Thanks.
In the offering bucket. Yeah. No, man, this is me trusting in you on what this looks like.
Yeah.
Even thinking about this, season, Mike, and, recognizing we're getting close to Christmas. We're getting close. Our Thanksgiving's around the corner. Mm-hmm. Trying to just even encourage people, maybe reconciling their doubts about things and God, and especially even this season of what it actually means to have this sense of merriment, right? And we know, I think, just in a reality, I know there's a lot of people that are struggling with things, right? Yeah. And as their care pastor, I know you hear a lot of those things, or someone that deals with care for a lot of people.
Yep.
Man, I know for a fact you've got some great words of encouragement. What would you tell those people, man, especially in this season?
Yeah. The best thing you can do when you're having doubts is to doubt your doubts.
Nice. Okay.
You know, we're fine doubting God or doubting this or that, but it's really healthy actually to say, well, what about this? And start doubting your doubts. And what's amazing is most of our doubts don't really have a lot of weight. They're pretty flimsy. And if you doubt your doubts, you'll probably self-correct down the road. The other thing is your doubts can feel a lot more significant in isolation. And when we're going through hard things and we're having our doubts, a lot of times we withdraw and we hold them in.
Very true. Yeah.
And I think being around people that are, you know, not just anybody, but you know, wise people who love us, who care for us, and just being open, say, man, I'm really struggling with this. The reality is that's normal. And so I would hope that HTC is a kind of place where it's okay to not be okay.
There you go. Yeah.
And we can be
transparent. We're all sinners who need a savior. We're all broken. Yeah.
It's not okay to stay that way.
There you go. Right, right.
Right. But it's okay to be not okay. And you know, we'll wait with you while you figure it out, while you work it through. And man, all the things that I've struggled in doubt over the years, man, as I've walked with God over time, it's just like, it just feels like, I don't know, maybe there's still something out there that I haven't seen yet that's going to really shake my faith. But it just, I don't know, there's a, I just have such a confidence at this stage of my life that God's got me. He's got everything around me. And I kind of don't have those doubts, but I can tell you, there's been a lot of things, a lot of seasons where, it was hard. So, don't isolate and doubt your doubts.
Oh, good. That's, I think that's actually great being able to like, in the sense we doubt so many things like you just said, but even recognizing like, okay, this is the way I feel. Should I even be feeling, can I doubt that doubt of feeling that way? Like, that's such a great, easy way to even remember that, man. So that's, that's great. I love that, Mike. Thank you so much, man. Honestly, every time we get to hang out, I really appreciate it, man. Every time I've sought your wisdom or seen you care for HDC and the people in it, man, it's always been a huge honor and privilege to do ministry alongside you, man. So
fun hanging out with you today. I'm glad we got to do this.
I actually want to ask just one last question. Okay. Especially with Christmas coming up and things like that. There was one Christmas where we had Mike Roberts, Pastor Mike Roberts, on stage singing a Christmas carol for us. Was that true? I just want to make sure. I didn't know if that's coming again. If we could be, I was going to give the people something to look forward to.
That's outside of my lane.
I thought maybe I could try to get some inside scoop, guys.
They trusted me with a Bing Crosby song, but
So it's fantastic. In case you guys missed it, you guys probably look it up online. You guys missed it online as well, he did try to sing a note from Whitney Houston in this sermon well. So props to you, man, because I will never do that as a sermon illustration, just so you know. But Mike, man, honestly, appreciate you, bro. HDC, I hope you found this helpful and encouraging. Till next time, we'll see you guys.